My name is Noelle Hanrahan, and you're listening to Flashpoints, KPFA's investigative news magazine. Yesterday morning, I interviewed Debbie Lynn Zuver at the Sonoma County Courthouse in Santa Rosa, just moments after she was sentenced to 21 years in state prison. On Thanksgiving Day, 14 months ago, Debbie Zuver, a lifelong Sonoma County resident, mother, and waitress, shot her ex-boyfriend, Tim Garloff, twice in the head. She pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter. Important parts of the information in this interview have not been heard by the courts, and they rejected her defense of battered woman syndrome. She was sentenced to the maximum term for voluntary manslaughter and the maximum enhancement for the use of a gun, totaling 21 years. I began by asking her if she was a battered woman.
I've been in a lot of relationships that haven't been particularly healthy, to say the least. Not that all of them have been terribly unhealthy. But when there was violence involved in the relationships in the past, it got really bad. You know, it escalated. I seemed to have a pattern of getting myself involved in really violent relationships. This last one, of course, was the worst. That's something I've been trying to really address and to, you know, learn about myself. But I come from a background with a lot of dysfunction and with abuse, and I think that contributes a lot to the choices that I've made. I broke up with him when he was in jail, and, you know, he called me later on and, you know, sweet-talked me, hey, come on, babe, you know, as soon as we get through this, you know, hey, I had no idea that was there, come on, you know, we're going to get a house, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and, yeah, I wanted to believe him. I did believe him. I believed him for a long time.
What made you believe that Tim Garloff was going to kill you?
He told me so. When he got out of jail, he was, like, paranoid. He was, like, angry. He was assaultive. He was combative. I would wake up, and he would be, like, sitting over the top of me when I was sleeping, and I'd just, like, wake up with his face right over the top of me. And there would be all this papers torn up all over the place, phone bills and cell phone bills, and he would be convinced that I'd been having affairs while he was in jail, and he was just, it was like dementia. He was crazy.
What kind of abuse did you suffer at the hands of Tim Garloff?
Tim broke my ribs on two occasions. One time, he threw a full jar of apple juice at full velocity, and I tried to run to get out of the way. It hit my left side. It hit me so hard, it knocked me out. I had multiple fractures all up and down my whole left rib cage. My left breast was black and blue on half of it for over a month. It's all black. My ribs were, they were a mess for like over 2 months. That was the last time that Kim broke them. He fractured my sternum. I had several black eyes. My girlfriends would see me with black eyes. Sometimes I'd forget I even had them, you know. And all my friends were very intimidated by him. They were very frightened by him. He made it a point to, like, show his weapons. You know, they carried, show his knife collection stuff.
What was he physically like?
Kim was, like, 5'10", 5'11", maybe. He weighed about 230 pounds. He was a big boy.
And when you first sat down and you were shocked at the sentence that you received, you were mentioning other ways in which he had been abusive to other people. What were those circumstances?
He had told me stories about, like, this one guy that he thought stole his motorcycle. Him and his buddy went, and they, I guess, like, broke into the guy's house, and they drug him out of his house in the middle of the night. They beat the hell out of him, and they took him out to the road. Tim really loved this story. They hung the guy out of a truck and hung his face down to the asphalt while they were driving down the road to convince this guy to give him back his motorcycle. Kim was arrested on assault on that one, but he went back later on. He was telling me a story about how he went back later on to try and convince this guy not to testify against him, you know. Kim used to tell me about how he used to beat Jody up, how he used to run a car off the road on Martinelli Road out in Forestville, that he'd shot at her, that he threatened to kill her, that he had people chasing her, that he had her beat up by people. He even told me who he had her beat up by, and he would use them as, you know, lessons I was supposed to learn from this stuff.
Starting from the beginning of the day, what happened on Thursday the 22nd, that Thanksgiving day?
I was back at my apartment. My friend was at work, you know, who's, I had rented the garage apartment from her. When she came home, I was just, you know, laying in bed. I was really just depressed. You know, I just wanted to get that. I was waiting to go to my sponsors because I was supposed to be going to a program. You know, well, I was going to go, I wanted to go into a Rinda Center, but I was really afraid of Kim. I had contacted Kim's attorney earlier that week and refused to testify for Kim on this manufacturing case. I wasn't going to lie for him anymore, you know. I just wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to sit up in this, actually, I was supposed to be in this very courtroom. I wasn't going to sit up on the stand and lie for him, you know. I just wasn't doing it.
Now, you were one of the main witnesses, his alibi witness in that case. For what reason? What would you have said or not said that would have helped his case?
Well, I was supposed to establish that his residence was with me at my former residence.
Did he pressure you?
He threatened me with my life. He told me that I better get with the program and I better hope that everything worked out because, you know, what happens to young ladies these days, they just get turned out and then they end up dead. You know, he told me stuff like that. He used to tell me, oh, you're so pretty. You're so pretty, God, I just hate for anything to happen to this face. Like, God, what if it was, you know, what if it was cut? What if it was this? What if it was that? I have assorted lengths in my hair, as you can see. Those lengths are from getting grabbed by the top of my head, thrown around, picked up, punched. I lost a lot of hair. I lost a lot of everything. I lost a really good sense of myself. I got really afraid. I lived in a cell. I started doing, you know, drugs with Kim. I've been doing them a little bit here and there, but I started really, you know, doing them, and I started drinking, you know, pretty regular. I preferred to stay numb because I couldn't handle what was going on around me. It was frightening at best. I lived in a lot of fear, and...
What happened that day?
Kim finally got a hold of me, and Sherry was home from work. He came over to give me back my vehicle. We were supposed to exchange his belongings, you know, for my vehicle and my belongings. He brought the keys and he insisted that I ride with him to go get my car, and I told him absolutely there's no way. No way was I getting into a vehicle with him alone. I told him I'd go with him if Sherry came, and he said forget it. And he asked Sherry if she would, you know, just drive me, and he told me where the vehicle was. Because the original deal was he was supposed to bring the vehicle to my house, and we were doing a straight exchange across, and that was that. It was a done deal. You know, we'd been split up. Kim told us where the car was at, and he made arrangements at that time with Sherry to come and get the rest of his belongings the next day, and that he was going to call her and they'd set up a time. I wasn't going to be there. I was supposed to be at my sponsor's getting ready to go into a Rinda Center. So then I went and picked up my car and brought it back, and that was, I don't know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. Kim and I had talked on the phone a couple times after that. I think I called him. I don't remember who called who first, to be honest with you, but I was trying to get the rest of my stuff because I had things that were missing. And people were still calling me on his cell phone and threatening me. They were threatening to kill me. They were threatening, it didn't matter. It doesn't matter where you go. You'll never be able to hide. We can find you anywhere. You know, you really stepped this time, and I can't, you know, Kim's going to get you.
And that's because you wouldn't testify?
It's because I told his attorney I'd have nothing to do with this case any further, and that everything in way of evidence for Kim was all self-manufactured. It was all a lie. I walked around from my studio into my dressing room and was grabbing some things, and I heard a noise and went out to check it out, and Kim was standing inside of my door, closing it and locking it, and he grabbed a hold of me. He assaulted me. He beat me up. He grabbed a hold of me by the neck, and he threw me down on the bed. It was like right next to the door. He hit me a couple times. He was on top of me with his knee in my stomach, and he was telling me how bad I hedged up and that how many times had he told me if I didn't cooperate and if he didn't beat his case, what was going to happen to me? What's going to happen, Deb? What's going to happen? You already know. He got up and he told me, no, you need to get a hold of the attorney and you need to straighten things out. And I told him, I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it. He picked me up. He threw me across the room. I landed on top of a dining room table. I have a little scar on my forehead where I nicked the cabinet before I hit the table. And I pulled myself off the table. He went and sat down on a futon and he was, you know, going on about, get my goddamn gun, get everything together, and you better give it to me right from now. You better get a hold of the attorney, you better this, you better that, you better get with the program. And he told me that he was going to kill me. And he, you know, he made me really believe it. He said it in a really, you know, like a menacing kind of a growl. He was leaned back on the futon and he had his left arm up, you know, on his forehead. And I reached over, I had the gun underneath my pillow. I'd been sleeping with it because I'd spent the night there, you know, at that house. I took the gun out. I walked across the room. I was actually going to give him the gun. Instead, I shot him. It was really loud. It was a really loud bang. And then I just remember yelling for Sherry. And I told her to come help me because I shot Kim. I remember her face was all red. Later she was yelling at me something. I don't remember everything. It's all like a blur, you know. I remember voices. I remember bright lights. I remember being in a hospital. I asked him about Kim. Nobody would give me any answers. I remember being in a police station, and one of the officers I knew, because I used to wait on him, his name was Jim Carlson, and he was talking to me, and I was asking for an attorney, and I was asking what had happened. I remember him taking my clothes. I remember him sticking me in a paper dumpster. I remember walking to a car in the rain. I remember them bringing me in here, and they stuck me in a one room. And then they took me down to mental health. They were telling me on the way that I was going to be locked inside of a room with glass walls for several days. I wouldn't be allowed out. I was really scared. I'd never been in jail before. I'd never really been in trouble before this. So, I don't remember, like, a whole bunch in the beginning. I just remember being really afraid. I thought Kim was still going to come get me. I thought his friends were going to come get me. And, it took a long time not to be afraid.
What did Kim say exactly during that time before you shot him?
He told me to bring in his things. He told me that he had a new woman. I told him good for him. He told me he was looking at serving 19 years. And then I really fucked up this time. He was sitting in the attorney's office when I called his attorney to tell him that I wasn't going to testify, and the secretary rang me through the office. I had no idea Kim was in there. I had no clue. And the attorney handed the phone over to Kim. That was 4 days before I shot him. That was the day I started carrying a weapon with me for my own protection, because I was afraid of Kim. I knew that once I called the attorney, that was it. Kim just kept threatening that he was going to kill me, that he'd hurt me, it didn't matter where I'd go. He he could find me, he could have people find me, even if he was in prison, and that I better hope to God for my own life that he beat his case, even though I'd slip it this much, because I was going to die, and that was all there was to it, and I believed him. I know right now, if I wouldn't have shot Kim on that night, I wouldn't be here. Kim had told me things about that if he was going to kill me, he would take me out and bury me in a hole somewhere in the country with a bunch of lies, and that my family would never know where I was. I would never be found. They would just think I kind of wandered off somewhere and that nobody would really suspect anything, and this was the perfect time to do that because him and I had split up. Nobody had really seen us together. And, he kept trying to tell me, oh, come on, look at all the stuff we've been through. You know better than this. You know better than this. You know better than this. Daddy, how much have you seen? I saw too much. I wanted help. I wanted my life back. I wanted my working in a restaurant that I used to work for before, and I really love my job. You know, they're really cool people to work for. I just wanted to go back to work. I wanted my home again by myself. I didn't want to be with Kim anymore. I wanted to go on camping trips, and I wanted to do things with my friends, go to concerts. I wanted to hang out with my mom. I wanted to shop with my daughter on the weekends. I didn't want to be worrying about having to always call in on my whereabouts to Kim. I didn't want to be worrying about where he was, where his friends were, what I was doing. I didn't want to have to worry about any of that anymore. I just wanted out. And now I am.
Why did you use a gun?
Because I found the gun the night before I called Kim's attorney. I was going through my house, gathering some of the stuff together, you know, through my apartment, and I found his gun. Kim always carried a gun. Kim always was known to carry a gun, and usually a knife, too. It's just that on the night that I shot Kim, he actually didn't have a weapon, and I didn't know that. So I thought he was armed. And he used to say that he was through. And I better hope he wasn't. You're my star witness, baby. You're my star witness. You better get with the program. You better hope that I end up walking out of this. Because if I'm through, you're through, and you're dead.
I'd like to thank you for the interview. I'm really sorry.
I wanted to state some facts about battered women. In the United States, a woman is battered every 12 seconds, which represents 5 women per minute, 300 per hour, 7,200 women every day. In 95% of all spousal abuse cases, women are hurt by men. Violent relationships are found in every income category, ethnic background, racial group, educational level, and profession. And up to 50% of all homeless women and children in this country are fleeing domestic violence. Battering is the single major cause of injury to women in the United States. 3 to 4 million American women are battered every year. And in almost 3/4 of reported spouse assault cases, the victim was divorced or separated at the time of the beating. 1 out of every 3 female homicide victims are killed by their husbands or boyfriends. If you're a battered woman, and you're out there, and you're hearing me, there's a lot of other ways out of there. Get help. Call someone, tell someone, call the police. Go to YWCA. Look up in the phone books. Christ, go to a church. Do anything, just get away. Stay away. You need to protect yourself, especially when you first leave. You're the most vulnerable at that time. And whatever you do, please don't end up like me.